Welcome to the Political Rewind. I'm Madhani Muturi. Coming up today, the Obama Mercial and the quiet voice of the 527s. But first, breaking down the stump.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Now, the stump speech. By now, both candidates have their stump speeches more than memorized. Even though the speeches evolve, the themes, the hooks, the jabs are honed to perfection. It is the distillation of their message. And in the closing days of the campaign, we are examining both candidates' stump speeches. Today, NPR's political correspondent Mara Liasson reports on McCain's.
John McCain is the underdog, and his combative 22-minute speech reflects where he is in the race. So does the opening music for his rallies, particularly appropriate here, just outside of Philadelphia, where the Rocky movies were set.
We're a few points down. The national media has written us off. Just the other day, Senator Obama's campaign announced that he's choosing his cabinet. He's measuring the drapes. Planning with Speaker Pelosi and Harry Reid.
McCain is more comfortable speaking off the cuff at a town hall meeting. Recently at big events, he's begun using a teleprompter. According to Michael Gerson, former speechwriter for President Bush, the main goal of any stump speech, in addition to rousing the audience right in front of you, is to get noticed by the media.
A stump speech, you want to try to shape the discourse. But mainly you're reacting to the discourse. You're trying to get in the news on that day. You're trying to take advantage of the themes of the moment, the gaffes of the last week, trying to get any traction you can.
On this day, the gaffe McCain uses was from the Democrats' gaffe machine and vice presidential candidate Joe Biden, who had just predicted a new President Obama would be tested by our enemies, just as a young John F. Kennedy was.
Senator Biden guaranteed that if Senator Obama is elected, we will have an international crisis to test America's new president. We don't want a president who invites testing from the world.
I mean, look at this section. The next president won't have time to get used to the office. We face many challenges.
That's Democratic strategist Bob Schrum, who's written thousands of speeches for his party's candidates. He thinks McCain is pushing on a string with his argument about experience, which Schrum believes is no longer effective.
Now, I know he's saying this because the Biden quote gave him the opportunity to do it. But if he's got any decent polling, he knows that after the first debate, Americans decided that Barack Obama was up to the challenge of being commander-in-chief.
Indeed, McCain does not labor the point. The rest of the speech contrasts his vision of the economy with Obama's, with lots of references to Joe the Plumber and attacks on Obama's promise to spread the wealth around.
Senator Obama's more interested in controlling who gets your piece of pie than he is in growing the pie.
There's almost no foreign policy in the speech, partly because the economy is so dominant, but there's also very little about the war in Iraq, which is ironic, says Michael Gerson, since it's the issue McCain once thought would be the centerpiece of his campaign.
Things getting so much better in Iraq has removed national security as a major debate in this election, which is really John McCain's strength. So it's a strange thing that policies he wanted that improved the situation in Iraq pretty dramatically have actually undermined one of the key elements of his appeal.
But another, even more fundamental element of his appeal is intact, his biography. And that, Gerson says, is one of the most effective parts of McCain's speech.
I've been fighting for this country since I was 17 years old, and I have the scars to prove it.
The speech ends with a McCain strength. It talks about fighting and being a fighter. That's an appropriate message for someone who's behind in the election. It also fits McCain's biography in a lot of ways. The speech does not develop his autobiography. It doesn't talk about the prison. It doesn't, you know, deal with Vietnam. But this message of fighting, fighting for a new direction of our country, for the economy, these sort of things draw attention to McCain's biography in a positive way without him having to tell the story.
Fight to get our economy out of the ditch and back in the lead. Fight for the ideals and character of a free people. Fight for our children's future. Fight for justice and opportunity for all. Stand up and defend our country from its enemies. Stand up. Stand up and fight. America is worth fighting for. Nothing is inevitable here. We never give up. We never quit. We never hide from history. We make history.
McCain has learned to deliver this rousing close effectively by surfing over the waves of applause. He'll do it again dozens of times in the remaining 8 days of the campaign.
Thank you, and God bless you. God bless America.
Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.
As Barack Obama and John McCain make their final pitches, we are listening closely to what they have to say. By now, the attacks and the applause lines in their stump speeches have been polished to perfection. Yesterday, NPR's national political correspondent Mara Liasson reported on Senator McCain's speech. Today, Senator Obama's closing argument.
Barack Obama is known for his soaring oratory and his ability to transport a crowd with his words. But these days, he's leaving nothing to chance. He uses a teleprompter at every event, and all the material he needs to make his argument about change is ripped right from the bad news headlines of any newspaper.
It's harder to save. It's harder to retire. It's harder to make the mortgage or fill up your gas tank or even keep electricity on at the end of the month. At this rate, the question isn't just whether you're better off than you were 4 years ago. The question is, are you better off than you were 4 weeks ago?
Bob Schrum has written thousands of speeches for dozens of Democratic candidates.
I think Obama's stump speech is remarkable for its continuity, its capacity to adapt and to take the news of the day in, put it inside the structure of the speech, but continue to make the same points over and over again. Not always in as abstract a way as he sometimes did in the primary. He's always talking about hope, and he's always talking about unity.
In every speech, Obama also pushes back against John McCain. Here he takes a swipe at McCain's claim that Obama will raise taxes on Joe the Plumber.
But let's be clear who Senator McCain's fighting for. He's not fighting for Joe the Plumber. He's fighting for Joe, the hedge fund manager.
Michael Gerson, who wrote speeches for President Bush and candidate Bob Dole, says Obama's speech has evolved. Now it's a little less lofty and a lot more populist.
The speech is very much an FDR Democratic class warfare speech. If you are a CEO, a hedge fund manager, a rich person, you're not the hero of this speech. He's very much running on economic populist themes in tough economic times.
And that's a good thing, says Bob Schrum.
Events demand a populist argument. Look, Democrats have for a long time been too afraid, I think, of what we fundamentally believe. And I think we ought to go out there, say what we believe, stand for it, and fight for it.
Obama's speech is more down-to-earth than it was during the primaries. The fierce urgency of now is gone. Instead, there's a laundry list of benefits for the middle class. A tax cut for 95% of workers, a 3-month moratorium on home foreclosures, 0 capital gains for small businesses. There's no talk about how his plans may have to adjust to the wrenching financial crisis, but he does warn that change won't come easy.
Bush has dug a deep hole. It's going to take some time to dig us out. We're all going to need to tighten our belts a little bit. We're all going to need to sacrifice.
And then he tells voters exactly how they'll have to sacrifice.
I will put more money into education, but I can't be a parent and turn off that TV set and make sure your kids do your homework.
Sounds pretty easy. So does this.
Imagine if all of you turn off the lights when you leave the room. If you check the pressure on your tires, if you took those steps that each of us can take to become more energy efficient, it would make an enormous difference.
This cautious candidate clearly doesn't want to risk stressing his supporters this close to the election. Obama's central argument has never changed. A vote for John McCain is the same thing as 4 more years of George W. Bush. Bob Schrum.
Over and over and over again in the speech, in every speech I've seen, he ties him to Bush. And he does it very, very effectively. But what's interesting is that the superstructure has never changed. The superstructure is change. The superstructure is hope. The superstructure is we're one country, we can overcome our divisions, which I think, by the way, is how he talks about race without explicitly talking about it.
Obama does bring up race, obliquely, by telling the audience that at some point every one of them had someone who stood up for them.
They might not have been able to vote, but they marched and fought so you could vote.
And indirectly, he acknowledges his own history-making run for the White House.
Maybe you could run for the United States Senate. Maybe you could run for the presidency of the United States of America. That's what this election's about.
In 1 week, he says, you can put an end to the politics that would divide a nation to win an election.
I promise you, we'll win Virginia. We'll win this election. And you and I together will change the country and change the world. Thank you, everybody. God bless you.
And that's right where he started 20 months ago, a consistent and disciplined candidate with a consistent and disciplined message. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Washington.
Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama has raised far more money than any presidential candidate in history, and a lot of that money is being spent on ads running on TV in competitive states. As NPR's David Folkenflik reports, the most remarkable ad of all is the 30-minute commercial that's running nationally this evening on more than a half dozen broadcast and cable networks.
The first-term senator was presented in a number of roles on TV tonight. Obama as surrogate president, Obama as professor, Obama as preacher. It was a counterpoint to how he has been characterized by some Republican and cable news hosts of late as a kind of radical. Instead, viewers saw him telling the story of his political philosophy through the challenges facing many Americans.
Mark Dowell and his wife Melinda have worked at the local plant for most of their adult lives. Recently, the plant cut back Mark's work to every other week. Now they're struggling to make ends meet.
It was a half-hour testimonial in the guise of a documentary. He was both the narrator and the subject, receiving support from leading political figures, including Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick.
What we need are big solutions and big thinking. And Barack Obama is a problem solver who thinks big. It's a once-in-a-generation kind of leadership, and that's what Barack is offering.
As Patrick speaks, a still photograph is shown of Obama from behind, standing before a seemingly endless sea of faces at a campaign rally. He outlined some specific policy positions, but also gently reintroduced himself as a child of a Kenyan and a Kansan, with reminders of the eloquence that propelled him from state senator to White House contender in 4 short years.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Obama never mentioned John McCain once. The Republican candidate appeared on CNN's Larry King a half hour later and aired a spot during the World Series, too, on Fox, saying Obama is not yet ready for the job. In Florida earlier today, McCain suggested the Democrat was getting ahead of himself.
He's measuring the drapes, and he's planned his first address to the nation, an infomercial. I guess I'm old-fashioned about these things. I prefer to let the voters weigh in before presuming the outcome.
It was a tightly scripted, smoothly orchestrated event designed to win over people who haven't yet committed. The ratings will be out in a day or two, but the final verdict will arrive next Tuesday night. David Folkenflik, NPR News.
I'm Madhani Maturi, and it's the Political Rewind. Finally today, no money loving for those independent groups.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. You may have noticed this election season is missing something that we had a lot of 4 years ago. Independent groups with a major impact, putting out a lot of ads or much-noticed ads like the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. That group played a prominent role in attacking Democratic candidate John Kerry in 2004. This time, outside groups didn't really catch on. NPR's Peter Overby has the story.
If these groups didn't score big headlines, it wasn't for lack of trying. Even yesterday, there was no let-up. Let's start at the National Press Club, sort of ground zero for Washington press conferences. Two groups were there with simultaneous conferences.
We see voter intimidation. We see a huge problem with these no-match, no-vote laws.
That was Steve Kest. He's executive director of ACORN, the community organizing group. It's fighting back against Republican accusations that it's stuffing the voter rolls with non-existent people. Kest was in one room announcing lawsuits and a new cable TV ad.
Tell John McCain, not this time. ACORN, voting is your right. Protecting it is our job.
The Association of Community.
Out the door and down the hall was the America Deserves Better PAC, unveiling what it called a final ad blitz to defeat Obama. This event was actually more of a campaign rally. The main speaker was Sacramento radio host Mark Williams.
We are the shining city on the hill. And there are those around Barack Obama who would like to extinguish those lights. We're not going to let that happen.
But the group's blitz turned out to be one new ad. Nobody could say if America Deserves Better has the money to put it on the air. things deteriorated as Williams got into an argument with a woman who supported Obama. She walked out, and Williams called after her.
Excuse me, ma'am. I paid you the courtesy. You can pay me the courtesy, too, you very rude old lady.
And so it's gone with the independent voices in the presidential campaign. Accusations, a fair amount of name-calling, but not enough money. Some wealthy donors were put off by the complexity of campaign finance law, but mainly the problem was here.
That sent the Dow Industrials into a breathtaking plunge. By the time the market
stocks
closed,
nosedived in their biggest sell-off in 21 years. People on the street
making 777-point nosedive.
After that, wealthy donors didn't have so much wealth. Take American Issues Project. One donor gave nearly $3 million for this ad last August, linking Barack Obama with former militant Bill Ayers.
Why would Barack Obama be friends with someone who bombed the Capitol and is proud of it?
We were the first to broach the topic and push it.
Chris LaCivita from Swift Boat Veterans for Truth produced the ad for American Issues Project. He says they had more ideas for going after Obama. Unlike 4 years ago, they were stymied.
We started a conversation that a lot of people recognized had an impact, but if you don't have the resources to keep the conversation going, it kind of makes it hard.
And even if the money is there, this sort of attack ad may not work as well as it used to. A veteran of liberal groups, Tom Matzey, says these ads can't get a good media ride anymore thanks to internet-based fact-checking.
The Swift Boaters of the future are not going to be broad spectrum. They're going to be narrow cast, is my view.
That is, aimed at demographic niche groups where they might not draw so much scrutiny. Matzey says this year's success stories are low-profile state-level groups.
But before the campaigns themselves start spending money, it helps to have someone else out there stoking the fires to keep the issue debate in a good place.
So, months and months ago, Progress Now and its state affiliates started building grassroots networks, laying the groundwork for a Democratic campaign. Republicans don't have any counterpart to this. So far, that is. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.
That's the Political Rewind. Thanks for tuning in, and we're blogging politics at Vox Politics. Find us at npr.org.